From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The Night Side of Nature by Catherine Cowley, Chapter 13, Haunted Houses. Everybody has heard of haunted houses, and there is no country and scarcely any place in which something of the sort is not known or talked of. And I suppose there is no one who, in the course of their travels, has not seen very respectable, good-looking houses shut up and uninhabited, because they had this evil reputation assigned to them. I have seen several such for my own part, and it is remarkable that this mala fama does not always, by any means, attach itself to building one would imagine most obnoxious to such a suspicion. For example, I never heard of a ghost being seen or heard in Haddon Hall, the most ghostly of houses, nor in many other antique, mysterious-looking buildings where one might expect them. While sometimes a house of a very prosaic aspect remains uninhabited and is ultimately allowed to fall to ruin, for no other reason, we are told, than that nobody can live in it. I remember my childhood such a house in Kent. I think it was on the road between Maidstone and Tunbridge, which had this reputation. There was nothing dismal about it. It was neither large nor old, and it stood on the borders of a well-frequented road. Yet I was assured it had stood empty for years, and as long as I lived in that part of the country, it never had an inhabitant, and I believe was finally pulled down, and all for no other reason than that it was haunted, and nobody could live in it. I have frequently heard of people, while traveling on the continent, getting into houses at a rent so low as to surprise them, and I have, moreover, frequently heard of very strange things occurring while they were there. I remember, for instance, a family of the name of S, who obtained a very handsome house at a most agreeably cheap rate, somewhere on the coast of Italy. I think it was Mola di Gaeta. They lived very comfortably in it until one day, while Mrs. S was sitting in the drawing room, which opened into a balcony overhanging the sea, she saw a lady dressed in white pass along before the windows, which were all closed. Concluding it was one of her daughters who had been accidentally shut out, she arose and opened the window to allow her to enter, but on looking out, to her amazement, there was nobody there, although there was no possible escape from the balcony unless by jumping into the sea. On mentioning this circumstance to somebody in the neighborhood, they were told that was the reason they had the house so cheap. Nobody liked to live in it. I have heard of several houses, even in populous cities, to which some strange circumstance of this sort is attached, some in London even, and some in this city and neighborhood. And what is more, unaccountable things actually do happen to those who inhabit them. Doors are strangely opened and shut, a rustling of silk, and sometimes a whispering, and frequently footsteps are heard. There is a house in Ayrshire to which this sort of thing has been attached for years, insomuch that it was finally abandoned to an old man and woman who said they were used to it and that they did not mind it. A distinguished author has told me that some time ago she passed a night at the house of an acquaintance in one of the Midland counties of England. She and her sister occupied the same room, and in the night they heard someone ascending the stairs. The foot came distinctly to the door, then turned away, ascended the next flight, and they heard it overhead. In the morning, on being asked if they had slept well, they mentioned the circumstance. "That is what everybody hears who sleeps in that room," said the lady of the house. "Many a time I have, when sleeping there, drawn up the night bolt, persuaded that the nurse was bringing the baby to me, but there was nobody to be seen. We have taken every pains to ascertain what it is, but in vain, and are now so used to it that we have ceased to care about the matter. I know of two or three other houses in this city, and one in the neighborhood, in which circumstances of this nature are transpiring, or have transpired very lately. But people hush them up from the fear of being laughed at, and also from an apprehension of injuring the character of the house, on which account I do not dwell on the particulars. But there was some time since a fama of this kind attached to a house in St. J. Street, some of the details of which became very public. It had stood empty a long time in consequence of the annoyances to which the inhabitants had been subjected. There was one room particularly which nobody could occupy without disturbance. On one occasion, a youth who had been abroad a considerable time, either in the army or navy, was put there to sleep on his arrival, since knowing nothing of these reports, it was hoped his rest might not be interrupted. In the morning, however, he complained of the dreadful time he had had with people looking in at him between the curtains of his bed all night, avowing his resolution to terminate his visit that same day, as he would not sleep there any more. After this period, the house stood empty again for a considerable time, but was at length taken and workmen sent in to repair it. One day, when the men were away at dinner, the master tradesman took the key and went to inspect progress, and having examined the lower rooms, he was ascending the stairs when he heard a man's foot behind him. He looked round, but there was nobody there, and he moved on again. Still there was somebody following, and he stopped and looked over the rails, but no one was to be seen. So, although feeling rather queer, he advanced into the drawing-room, where a fire had been lighted, and wishing to combat the uncomfortable sensation that was creeping over him, he took hold of a chair, and drawing it resolutely along the floor, he slammed it down upon the hearth with some force and seated himself in it, when, to his amazement, the action, and all its particulars of sound, was immediately repeated by his unseen companion, who seemed to seat himself beside him on a chair as invisible as himself. Horror-struck, the worthy builder started up and rushed out of the house. There is a house in S Street in London, which, having stood empty a good while, was at length taken by Lord B. The family were annoyed by several unpleasant occurrences, and by the sound of footsteps, which were often audible, especially in Lady B.'s bedroom, who, though she could not see the form, was occasionally conscious of its immediate proximity. Sometime since, a gentleman, having established himself in a lodging in London, felt, the first night he slept there, that the clothes were being dragged off his bed. He fancied he had done it himself in his sleep, and pulled them on again. But it happens repeatedly. He gets out of bed each time, can find nobody, no string, no possible explanation, nor can obtain any from the people of the house, who only seem distressed and annoyed. On mentioning it to someone in the neighborhood, he is informed that the same thing has occurred to several preceding occupants of the lodging, which, of course, he left. The circumstances that happened at Newhouse in Hampshire, as detailed by Mr. Barham in the third volume of the Ingoldsby Legends, are known to be perfect authentic, as are the following, the account of which I have received from a highly respectable servant, residing in a family with whom I am well acquainted. She informs me that she was, not very long since, living with a Colonel and Mrs. W., who, being at Carlisle, engaged a furnished house, which they obtained at an exceedingly cheap rate, because nobody liked to live in it. This family, however, met with no annoyance and attached no importance to the rumor which had kept the house empty. There were, however, two rooms in it wholly furnished, and as the house was large, they were dispensed with till the recurrence of the race week. When expecting company, these two rooms were temporarily fitted up for the use of the nurses and children. They were heavy Venetian blinds to the windows, and in the middle of the night, the person who related the circumstance to me was awakened by the distinct sound of these blinds being pulled up and down with violence, perhaps as many as 20 times. The fire had fallen low, and she could not see whether they were actually moved or not, but lay trembling in indescribable terror. Presently feet were heard in the room, and a stamping of several feet, as if several men were moving about without stockings. While lying in the state of agony, she was comforted by hearing the voice of a nurse who slept in another bed in the same chamber, exclaiming, "The Lord have mercy upon us." The second woman then asked the first if she had courage to get out of bed and stir up the fire, so that they might be able to see, which by a great effort she did, the chimney being near her bed. There was, however, nothing to be discovered, everything being precisely as when they went to bed. On another occasion, when they were sitting in the evening at work, they distinctly heard someone counting money and the chink of the pieces as they were laid down. The sound proceeded from the inner room of the two, but there was nobody there. This family left the house, and though a large and commodious one, she understood it remained unoccupied as before. A respectable citizen of Edinburgh not long ago went to America to visit his son, who had married and settled there. The morning after his arrival, he declared his determination to return immediately to Philadelphia, from which the house was at a considerable distance, and on being interrogated as to the cause of this sudden departure, he said that in the previous night he had heard a man walking about his room, who had approached the bed, drawn back the curtains, and bent over him. Thinking it was somebody who had concealed himself there with ill intentions, he had struck out violently at the figure, when, to his horror, his arm passed unimpeded through it. Other extraordinary things happened in that house, which had the reputation of being haunted, although the son had not believed it, and had therefore not mentioned the report to the father. One day the children said they had seen running after such a queer thing in the cellar. It was like a goat, and not like a goat, but it seemed to be like a shadow. A few years ago, some friends of mine were taking a house in the city, when the servants of the people who were leaving advised them not to have anything to do with it, for that there was a ghost in it that screamed dreadfully, and that they never could keep a stitch of clothes on them at night. The bed coverings were always pulled off. My friends laughed heartily and took the house, but the cries and groans all over it were so frequent that they at length got quite used to them. It is to be observed that the house was a flat or floor shut in, so that there could be no draughts of air nor access for tricks. Besides, it was a woman's voice, sometimes close to their ears, sometimes in a closet, sometimes behind their beds, in short, in all directions. Everybody heard it that went to the house. The tenant that succeeded them, however, has never been troubled with it. The story of the brown lady at the Marquis of T's in Norfolk is known to many. The Honorable H.W. told me that a friend of his, while staying there, had often seen her, and had one day inquired of his host, who was the lady in brown that he had met frequently on the stairs? Two gentlemen, whose names were mentioned to me, resolved to watch for her and intercept her. They at length saw her, but she eluded them by turning down a staircase, and when they looked over she had disappeared. Many persons have seen her. There is a Scotch family of distinction, who I am told are accompanied by an unseen attendant, whom they call Spinning Jenny. She is heard spinning in their house in the country, and when they come into town she spins here. Servants and all hear the sound of her wheel. I believe she accompanies them no further than to their own residences, not to those of other people. Jenny is supposed to be a former housemaid of the family, who was a great spinner, and they are so accustomed to her presence as to feel it no annoyance. The following very singular circumstance was related to me by the daughter of the celebrated Mrs. S. Mrs. S. and her husband were traveling into Wales and had occasion to stop on their way some days at Ostrey. There they established themselves in a lodging, to reach the door of which they had to go down a sort of close or passage. The only inhabitants of the house were the mistress, a very handsome woman, and two maids, Mr. and Mrs. S., however, very soon had occasion to complain of the neglected state of the rooms, which were apparently never cleaned or dusted, though strange to say, to judge by their own ears, the servants were doing nothing else all night, their sleep being constantly disturbed by the noise of rubbing, sweeping, and the moving of furniture. When they complained to these servants of the noises in the night and the dirt of the rooms, they answered that the noise was not made by them, and that it was impossible for them to do their work, exhausted as they were by sitting up all night with their mistress, who could not bear to be alone when she was in bed. Mr. and Mrs. S. afterward discovered that she had her room lighted up every night, and one day, as they were returning from a walk, and she happened to be going down the close before them, they heard her saying, as she turned her head sharply from side to side, "Are you there again? What the devil? Go away, I tell you," etc. On applying to the neighbors for an explanation of these mysteries, the good people only shook their heads and gave mysterious answers. Mr. and Mrs. S. afterwards learned that she was believed to have murdered a girl who formerly lived in her service. There is nothing in the conduct of this unhappy woman which may not be perfectly well accounted for by the supposition of a guilty conscience, but the noises heard by Mr. and Mrs. S. at night are curiously in accordance with a variety of similar stories, wherein this strange visionary repetition of the trivial actions of daily life or of some particular incident has been observed. The affair of Lord St. Vincent's was of this nature, and there is somewhat extant an account of the ghost of Peter the Great of Russia, having appeared to Dr. Dopelio, complained to him of the sufferings he endured from having to act over again his former cruelties, a circumstance which exhibits a remarkable coincidence with a Glasgow dream, mentioned in a preceding chapter. We must, of course, attach a symbolical meaning to these phenomena, and conclude that these reactings are a family in one of the English counties was a few years ago terribly troubled by an unseen inmate, who chiefly seemed to inhabit a large cellar, into which there was no entrance except the door, which was kept locked. Here there would be a loud knocking, sometimes a voice crying, heavy feet walking, etc. At first, the old trustworthy butler would summon his acolytes and descend, armed with sword and blunderbuss, but no one was to be seen. They could often hear the feet following them upstairs from the cellar, and once when the family had determined to watch, they found themselves accompanied upstairs not only by the sound of the feet, but by a visible shadowy companion. They rushed up, flew to their chamber, and shut the door, when instantly they felt and saw the handle turned in their hand by a hand outside. Windows and doors were opened in spite of locks and keys, but notwithstanding the most persevering investigations, the only clue to the mystery was the appearance of that spectral figure. The knockings and sounds of people at work, asserted to be heard in mines, is a fact maintained by many sensible men, overseers, and superintendents as well as by the workmen themselves. And there is a strong persuasion, I know, among the miners of Cornwall and those of Mendip, that these visionary workmen are sometimes heard among them, on which occasions the horses evince their apprehensions by trembling and sweating. But as I have no means of verifying these reports, I do not dwell upon them further. When the mother of George Canning, then Mrs. Hunn, was an actress in the provinces, she went, among other places, to Plymouth, having previously requested her friend, Mr. Bernard of the theatre, to procure her a lodging. On her arrival, Mr. B. told her that if she was not afraid of a ghost, she might have a comfortable residence at a very low rate. "For there is," he said, "a house belonging to our carpenter that is reported to be haunted, and nobody will live in it. If you like to have it, you may, and for nothing, I believe, for he is so anxious to get a tenant. Only you must not let it be known that you do not pay rent for it." Mrs. Hunn, alluding to the theatrical apparitions, said it would not be the first time she had had to do with a ghost, and that she was very willing to encounter this one. So she had her luggage taken to the house in question, and the bed prepared. At her usual hour, she sent her maid and her children to bed, and curious to see if there was any foundation for the rumor she had heard, she seated herself, with a couple of candles and a book, to watch the event. Beneath the room she occupied was a carpenter's workshop, which had two doors. The one, which opened into the street, was barred and bolted within. The other, a smaller one, opening into the passage, was only on the latch, and the house was, of course, closed for the night. She had read something more than half an hour when she perceived a noise issuing from this lower apartment, which sounded very much like the sawing of wood. Presently, other such noises as usually proceed from a carpenter's workshop were added, till by and by there was a regular concert of knockings and hammerings and sawing and planing, the whole sounding like half a dozen busy men in full employment. Being a woman of considerable courage, Mrs. Hunn resolved, if possible, to penetrate the mystery, so taking off her shoes, that her approach might not be heard, with her candle in her hand, she very softly opened the door and descended the stairs, the noise continuing as loud as ever, and evidently proceeding from the workshop, till she opened the door, when instantly all was silent, all was still. Not a mouse was stirring, and the tools in the wood and everything else lay as they had been left by the workmen when they went away. Having examined every part of the place, and satisfied herself that there was nobody there, and that nobody could get into it, Mrs. Hunn ascended to her room again, beginning almost to doubt her own senses, and question with herself whether she had really heard the noise or not, when it recommenced and continued, without intermission, for about half an hour. She, however, went to bed, and the next day told nobody what had occurred, having determined to watch another night before mentioning the affair to anyone. As, however, the strange scene was acted over again without her being able to discover the cause of it, she now mentioned the circumstance to the owner of the house and to her friend Bernard, and the former, who would not believe it, agreed to watch with her, which he did. The noise began as before, and he was so horror-struck that instead of entering the workshop, as she wished him to do, he rushed into the street. Mrs. Hunn continued to inhabit the house the whole summer, and when referring afterward to the adventure, she observed that use was second nature, and that she was sure if any night those ghostly carpenters had not pursued their visionary labors, she should have been quite frightened lest they should pay her a visit upstairs. From many recorded cases, I find the vulgar belief that buried money is frequently the cause of these disturbances is strongly borne out by facts. This certainly does seem to us very strange, and can only be explained by the hypothesis suggested that the soul awakes in the other world in exactly the same state in which it quitted this. In the above-mentioned instances, of what are called haunted houses, there is generally nothing seen, but those are equally abundant where the ghostly visitor is visible. Two young ladies were passing the night in a house in the north, when the youngest, then a child, awoke and saw an old man in a Kilmarnock nightcap walking about their bedroom. She said when telling the story in afterlife that she was not the least frightened. She was only surprised, but she found that her sister, who was several years older than herself, was in a state of great terror. He continued some time moving about, and at last went to a chest of drawers, where there lay a parcel of buttons belonging to a traveling tailor who had been at work in the house. Whether the old man threw them down or not, she could not say, but just then they all fell rattling off the drawers to the floor, whereupon he disappeared. The next morning, when they mentioned the circumstance, she observed that the family looked at each other in a significant manner. But it was not till she was older she learned that the house was said to be haunted by this old man. "It never occurred to me," she said, "that it was a ghost. Who could have thought of a ghost in a Kilmarnock nightcap?" At the Leipzig Fair, lodgings are often very scarce, and on one occasion a stranger who had arrived late in the evening had some difficulty in finding a bed. At length, he found a vacant chamber in the house of a citizen. It was one they made no use of, but they said he was welcome to it, and weary and sleepy, he gladly accepted the offer. Fatigued as he was, however, he was disturbed by some unaccountable noises, of which he complained to his hosts in the morning. They pacified him by some excuses, but the next night, not long after he had gone to bed, he came downstairs in great haste, with his portmanteau on his shoulder, declaring he would not stay there another hour for the world. For that, a lady in a strange, old-fashioned dress had come into the room with a dagger in her hand and made threatening gestures at him. He accordingly went away, and the room was shut up again. But some time afterward, a servant girl in the family of the citizen being taken ill, they were obliged to put her into that room in order to separate her from the rest of the family. Here she recovered her health rapidly, and as she had never complained of any annoyance, she was asked, when she was quite well, whether anything particular had happened while she inhabited that chamber. "Oh, yes," she answered. "Every night there came a strange lady into the room, who sat herself on the bed and stroked me with her hand, and I believe it is to her I owe my speedy recovery. But I could never get her to speak to me. She only sighs and weeps." Not very long since, a gentleman set out, one fine midsummer's evening, when it is light all night in Scotland, to walk from Montrose to Brechin. As he approached the place called Dun, he observed a lady walking on before, from which the lateness of the hour somewhat surprised him. Some time afterward, he was found by the early laborers lying on the ground near the churchyard in a state of insensibility. All he could tell them was that he had followed this lady till she had turned her head and looked round at him, when, seized with horror, he had fainted. "Oh," said they, "you have seen the Lady of Dun." What is the legend attached to this Lady of Dun, I do not know. Monsieur de S. had been violently in love with Hippolyte Clairon, the celebrated French actress, but she rejected his suit in so peremptory a manner that even when he was at the point of death, she refused his earnest entreaties that she would visit him. Indignant at her cruelty, he declared that he would haunt her, and he certainly kept his word. I believe she never saw his ghost, but he appears to have been always near her, at least on several occasions when other people doubted the fact. He signalized his presence at her bidding by various sounds, and this, wherever she happened to be at the moment. Sometimes it was a cry, at others a shot, and at others a clapping of hands or music. She seems to have been slow to believe in the extra-natural character of these noises, and even when she was ultimately convinced, to have been divided between horror on the one hand and diversion at the oddness of the circumstance on the other. The sounds were heard by everybody in her vicinity, and I am informed by Mr. Charles Kirkpatrick Sharp, that the Margrave of Ansbach, who was subsequently her lover, and Mr. Keppel Craven, were perfectly well acquainted with the circumstances of this haunting, and entertained no doubt of the fact above alluded to. The ghost known by the designation of the White Lady, which is frequently seen in different castles or palaces belonging to the royal family of Prussia, has been mentioned in other publications. I think she was long supposed to be a Countess Agnes of Orlemund, but a picture of a princess called Bertha or Perchta von Rosenberg discovered some time since was thought so exceedingly to resemble the apparition that it is now a disputed point which of the two ladies it is, or whether it is or is not the same apparition that is seen at different places. Neither of these ladies appear to have been very happy in their lives, but the opinion of it being the Princess Bertha, who lived in the 15th century, was somewhat countenanced by the circumstance that at a period when, in consequence of the war, an annual benefit which she had bequeathed to the poor was neglected, the apparition seemed to be unusually disturbed and was seen more frequently. She is often observed before death, and one of the Fredericks said, shortly before his decease, that he should not live long, for he had met the White Lady. She wears a widow's band and veil, but is sufficiently transparent to show her features, which do not express happiness, but placidity. She has only been twice heard to speak. In December 1628, she appeared in the palace at Berlin and was heard to say, "Veni judica vivos et mortus, judicium mihi ad hoc superest. Come judge the quick and the dead. I wait for judgment." On the other occasion, which is more recent, one of the princesses at the castle of Nauhaus in Bohemia was standing before a mirror trying on a new headdress, when on asking her waiting maid what the hour was, the White Lady suddenly stepped from behind a screen and said, "It is 10 o'clock, your love," which is the mode in which the sovereign princes address each other instead of "your highness." The princess was much alarmed, soon fell sick, and died in a few weeks. She has frequently evinced displeasure at the exhibition of impiety or vice, and there are many records of her different appearances to be found in the works of Balbinus and of Erasmus Francisci, and in a publication called The Iris, published in Frankfurt in 1819. The editor, George Doring, who is said to have been a man of great integrity, gives the following account of one of her later appearances, which he declares he received just as he gives it, from the lips of his own mother, on whose word and judgment he could perfectly rely, and shortly before his death, an inquiry being addressed to him with regard to the correctness of the narration, he vouched for its authenticity. It seems that the elder sister of his mother was companion to one of the ladies of the court, and that the younger ones were in the habit of visiting her frequently. Two of these, Doring's mother and another, aged 14 and 15, were once spending a week with her, when she being out and they alone with her needlework, chattering about the court diversions, they suddenly heard the sound of a stringed instrument like a harp, which seemed to proceed from behind a large stove that occupied one corner of the room. Half in fear and half in fun, one of the girls took a yard measure that lay beside them and struck the spot, whereupon the music ceased, but the stick was wrested from her hand. She became alarmed, but the other, named Christina, laughed and said she must have fancied it, adding that the music doubtless proceeded from the street, though they could not descry any musicians. To get over her fright, of which she was half ashamed, the former now ran out of the room to visit a neighbor for a few minutes, but when she returned, she found Christina lying on the floor in a swoon, who, on being revived with the aid of the attendants who had heard the scream, related that no sooner had her sister left her than the sound was repeated, close to the stove, and a white figure had appeared and advanced toward her, whereupon she had screamed and fainted. The lady who owned the apartments flattered herself that this apparition betokened that a treasure was hidden under the stove, and imposing silence on the girls, she sent for a carpenter and had the planks lifted. The floor was found to be double, and below was a vault from which issued a very unwholesome vapor, but no treasure was found, nor anything but a quantity of quicklime. The circumstance being now made known to the king, he expressed no surprise. He said that the apparition was doubtless that of a Countess of Orlemunde, who had been buried alive in that vault. She was the mistress of a margrave of Brandenburg, by whom she had two sons. When the prince became a widower, she expected he would marry her, but he urged as an objection that he feared, in that case, her sons might hereafter dispute the succession with the lawful heirs. In order to remove this obstacle out of her way, she poisoned the children, and the margrave, disgusted and alarmed, had her walled up in that vault for her pains. He added that she was usually seen every 7 years, and was preceded by the sound of a harp, on which instrument she had been proficient, and also that she more frequently appeared to children than to adults, as if the love she had denied her own offspring in life was now her torment, and that she sought a reconciliation with childhood in general. I know from the best authority that the fact of these appearances is not doubted by those who have the fullest opportunities of inquiry and investigation, and I remember seeing in the English papers, a few years since, a paragraph copied from the foreign journals to the effect that the White Lady had been seen again, I think, at Berlin. The following very curious relation I received from the gentleman to whom the circumstances occurred, who is a professional man residing in London. I was brought up by a grandfather and four aunts, all ghost seers and believers in supernatural appearances. The former had been a sailor and was one of the crew that sailed round the world with Lord Anson. I remember when I was about 8 years old that I was awakened by the screams of one of these ladies with whom I was sleeping, which summoned all the family about her to inquire the cause of the disturbance. She said that she had seen Nancy by the side of the bed, and that she was slipping into it. We had scarcely got downstairs in the morning before intelligence arrived that that lady had died precisely at the moment my aunt said she saw her. Nancy was her brother's wife. Another of my aunts, who was married and had a large family, foretold my grandfather's death at a time that we had no reason to apprehend it. He also had appeared at her bedside. He was then alive and well, but he died a fortnight afterwards. But it would be tedious were I to enumerate half the instances I could recall of a similar description, and I will therefore proceed to the relation of what happened to myself. I was, some few years since, invited to pass a day and night at the house of a friend in Hertfordshire, with whom I was intimately acquainted. His name was B., and he had formerly been in business as a saddler in Oxford Street, where he realized a handsome fortune, and had now retired to enjoy his otium cum dignate in the rural and beautiful village of Surat. It was a gloomy Sunday in the month of November, when I mounted my horse for the journey, and there was so much appearance of rain that I should certainly have selected some other mode of conveyance had I not been desirous of leaving the animal in Mr. E.'s draw yard for the winter. Before I got as far as St. John's Wood, the threatening clouds broke, and by the time I reached Watford, I was completely soaked. However, I proceeded and arrived at Surat before my friend and his wife had returned from church. The moment they did so, they furnished me with dry clothes, and I was informed that we were to dine at the house of Mr. D., a very agreeable neighbor. I felt some little hesitation about presenting myself in such a costume, for I was decked out in a full suit of Mr. B.'s, who was a stout man of 6 feet in height, while I am rather of the diminutive order, but my objections were overruled. We went, and my appearance added not a little to the hilarity of the party. At 10 o'clock we separated, and I returned with Mr. and Mrs. B. to their house, where I was shortly afterwards conducted to a very comfortable bedroom. Fatigued with my day's ride, I was soon in bed and soon slept. But I do not think I could have slept long before I was awakened by the violent barking of dogs. I found that the noise had disturbed others as well as myself, for I heard Mr. B., who was lodged in the adjoining room, open his window and call to them to be quiet. They were obedient to his voice, and as soon as quietness ensued, I dropped again into sleep. But I was again awakened by an extraordinary pressure upon my feet. That I was perfectly awake, I declare. The light that stood in the chimney corner shone strongly across the foot of the bed, and I saw the figure of a well-dressed man in the act of stooping and supporting himself in so doing by the bedclothes. He had on a blue coat with bright gilt buttons, but I saw no head. The curtains at the foot of the bed, which were partly looped back, just hung so as to conceal that part of his person. At first I thought it was my host, and as I had dropped my clothes, as is my habit, on the floor at the foot of the bed, I supposed he was come to look after them, which rather surprised me. But just as I had raised myself upright in bed, and was about to inquire into the occasion of his visit, the figure passed on. I then recollected that I had locked the door, and becoming somewhat puzzled, I jumped out of bed, but I could see nobody, and on examining the room, I found no means of ingress but the door through which I had entered, and one other, both of which were locked on the inside. Amazed and puzzled, I got into bed again, and sat some time ruminating on the extraordinary circumstance, when it occurred to me that I had not looked under the bed. So I got out again, fully expecting to find my visitor, whoever he was, there, but I was disappointed. So after looking at my watch and ascertaining that it was 10 minutes past 2, I stepped into bed again, hoping now to get some rest. But alas, sleep was banished for that night. And after turning from side to side and making vain endeavors at forgetfulness, I gave up the point and lay till the clocks struck 7, perplexing my brain with the question of who my midnight visitor could be, and also how he had got in and how he had got out of my room. About 8 o'clock, I met my host and his wife at the breakfast table, when in answer to their hospitable inquiries of how I had passed the night, I mentioned first that I had been awakened by the barking of some dogs, and that I had Mr. B. open his window and call to them. He answered that 2 strange dogs had gotten to the yard and had disturbed the others. I then mentioned my midnight visitor, expecting that they would either explain the circumstance or else laugh at me and declare I must have dreamt it. But to my surprise, my story was listened to with grave attention, and they related to me the tradition with which this spectre, for such I found they deemed it to be, was supposed to be connected. This was to the effect that many years ago a gentleman so attired had been murdered there, under some frightful circumstances, and that his head had been cut off. On perceiving that, I was very unwilling to accept this explanation of the mystery, for in spite of my family peculiarity, I had always been an entire disbeliever in supernatural appearances. They begged me to prolong my visit for a day or two, when they would introduce me to the rector of the parish, who would furnish me with such evidence with regard to circumstances of a similar nature, as would leave no doubt on my mind as to the possibility of their occurrence. But I had made an engagement to dine at Watford on my way back, and I confess, moreover, that after what I had heard, I did not feel disposed to encounter the chance of another visit from the mysterious stranger. So I declined the proffered hospitality and took my leave. Some time after this, I happened to be dining at C Street, in company with some ladies resident in the same county. When chancing to allude to my visit to Surratt, I added that I had met with a very extraordinary adventure there, which I had never been able to account for, when one of these ladies immediately said that she hoped I had not had a visit from the headless gentleman in a blue coat and gilt buttons, who was to have been seen by many people in that house. Such is the conclusion of this marvelous tale, as regards myself, and I can only assure you that I have related facts as they occurred, and that I had never heard a word about this apparition in my life till Mr. B. related to me the tradition above alluded to. Still, as I am no believer in supernatural appearances, I am constrained to suppose that the whole affair was the product of my imagination. I must add that Mr. B. mentioned some strange circumstances connected with another house in the county, inhabited by a Mr. M., which were corroborated by the ladies above alluded to. Both parties agreed that from the unaccountable noises which were heard there, that gentleman had the greatest difficulty in persuading any servants to remain with him. This is one of those curious instances of determined skepticism that fully justify the patriarch's prediction. The following interesting letter, written by a member of a very distinguished English family, will furnish its own explanation. As you express a wish to know what degree of credit is to be attached to a garbled tale which has been sent forth after a lapse of between 30 and 40 years as an accredited ghost story, I will state the facts as they were recalled to my mind last year by a daughter of Sir William A. C., who sent the book to me, requesting me to tell her if there was any foundation for the story, which she could scarcely believe, since she had never heard my mother allude to it. I read the narrative with surprise, it being evidently not furnished by any of the family, nor indeed by any one who was with us at the time. Yet, though full of mistakes in names, etc., some particulars come so near the truth as to puzzle me. The facts are as follows: Sir James, my mother, with myself and my brother Charles, went abroad towards the end of the year 1786. After trying several different places, we determined to settle at Lille, where we found the masters particularly good, and where we had also letters of introduction to several of the best French families. There Sir James left us, and after passing a few days in an uncomfortable lodging, we engaged a nice, very large family house, which we liked very much, and which we obtained at a very low rent, even for that part of the world. About 3 weeks after we were established in our new residence, I walked one day with my mother to the banker's for the purpose of delivering our letter of credit from Sir Robert Harry's, and drawing some money, which being paid in heavy 5-franc pieces, we found we could not carry, and therefore requested the banker to send, saying we live in the Place du Lion d'Or. Whereupon he looked surprised, and observed that he knew of no house there fit for us, except indeed, he added, the one that has been long uninhabited, on account of the revenant that walks about it. He said this quite seriously and in a natural tone of voice, in spite of which we laughed, and were quite entertained at the idea of a ghost, but at the same time we begged him not to mention the thing to our servants, lest they should take any fancies into their heads, and my mother and I resolved to say nothing about the matter to any one. "I suppose it is the ghost," said my mother, laughing, "that wakes us so often by walking over our heads." We had, in fact, been awakened several nights by a heavy foot, which we supposed to be that of one of the men servants, of whom we had 3 English and 4 French. Of women servants we had 5 English, and all the rest were French. The English ones, men and women, every one of them, returned ultimately to England with us. A night or two afterward, being again awakened by the step, my mother asked Cresswell, who slept in the room above us. "No one, my lady," she replied, "it is a large empty garret." About a week or 10 days after this, Cresswell came to my mother one morning and told her that all the French servants talked of going away because there was a revenant in the house, adding that there seemed to be a strange story attached to the place, which was said, together with some other property, to have belonged to a young man whose guardian, who was also his uncle, had treated him cruelly and confined him in an iron cage, and as he had subsequently disappeared, it was conjectured he had been murdered. This uncle, after inheriting the property, had suddenly quitted the house and sold it to the father of the man of whom we had hired it. Since that period, though, it had been several times let. Nobody ever stayed in it above a week or two, and for a considerable time past it had no tenant at all. "And do you really believe all this nonsense, Cresswell?" said my mother. "Well, I don't know, my lady," answered she, "but there's the iron cage in the garret over your bedroom, where you may see it if you please." Of course we rose to go, and just at that moment an old officer with his Croix de St. Louis called upon us. We invited him to accompany us, and we ascended together. We found, as Cresswell had said, a large empty garret with bare brick walls, and in the further corner of it stood an iron cage, such as wild beasts are kept in, only higher. It was about 4 feet square and 8 in height, and there was an iron ring in the wall at the back to which was attached an old rusty chain with a collar fixed to the end of it. I confess it made my blood creep when I thought of the possibility of any human being having inhabited it, and our old friend expressed as much horror as ourselves, assuring us that it must certainly have been constructed for some such dreadful purpose. As, however, we were no believers in ghosts, we all agreed that the noises must proceed from somebody who had an interest in keeping the house empty, and since it was very disagreeable to imagine that there were secret means of entering it at night, we resolved as soon as possible to look out for another residence, and in the meantime to say nothing about the matter to anybody. After 10 days after this determination, my mother observing one morning that Cresswell, when she came to dress her, looked exceedingly pale and ill, inquired if anything was the matter with her. "Indeed, my lady," she answered, "we have been frightened to death, and neither I nor Mrs. Marsh can sleep again in the room we are now in." "Well," returned my mother, "you shall both come and sleep in the little spare room next to us. But what has alarmed you?" "Someone, my lady, went through our room in the night. We both saw the figure, but we covered our heads with the bedclothes and lay in a dreadful fright till morning." On hearing this, I could not help laughing, upon which Cresswell burst into tears, and seeing how nervous she was, we comforted her by saying we had heard of a good house, and that we should very soon abandon our present habitation. A few nights afterwards, my mother requested me and Charles to go to her bedroom and fetch her frame, that she might prepare her work for the next day. It was after supper, and we were ascending the stairs by the light of a lamp, which was always kept burning, when we saw, going up before us, a tall, thin figure, with hair flowing down his back, and wearing a loose powdering gown. We both at once concluded it was my sister Hannah, and called out, "It won't do, Hannah! You cannot frighten us!" Upon which the figure turned into a recess in the wall, but as there was nobody there when we passed, we concluded that Hannah had contrived somehow or other to slip away and make her escape by the back stairs. On telling this to my mother, she said, "It is very odd, for Hannah went to bed with a headache before you came in from your walk, and sure enough, on going to her room, there we found her fast asleep. And Alice, who was at work there, assured us that she had been so for more than an hour." On mentioning this circumstance to Cresswell, she turned quite pale and exclaimed that this was precisely the figure she and Marsh had seen in their bedroom. About this time, my brother Harry came to spend a few days with us, and we gave him a room up another pair of stairs at the opposite end of the house. A morning or two after his arrival, when he came down to breakfast, he asked my mother angrily whether she thought he went to bed drunk and could not put out his own candle, that she sent those French rascals to watch him. My mother assured him that she never thought of doing such a thing. But he persisted in the accusation, adding, "Last night I jumped up and opened the door, and by the light of the moon through the skylight, I saw the fellow in his loose gown at the bottom of the stairs. If I had not been in my shirt, I would have gone after him and made him remember coming to watch me." We were now preparing to quit the house, having secured another belonging to a gentleman who was going to spend some time in Italy. But a few days before removal, it happened that Mr. and Mrs. Atkins, some English friends of ours, called, to whom we mentioned these circumstances, observing how extremely unpleasant it was to live in a house that somebody found means of getting into, though how they contrived it we could not discover, nor what their motive could be, except it was to frighten us, adding that nobody could sleep in the room Marsh and Cresswell had been obliged to give up. Upon this, Mrs. Atkins laughed heartily and said she should like, of all things, to sleep there, if my mother would allow her, adding that with her little terrier, she should not be afraid of any ghost that ever appeared. As my mother had, of course, no objection to this fancy of hers, she requested Mrs. Atkins to ride home with the groom in order that the latter might bring her night things before the gates of the town should be shut, as they were then residing a little away in the country. Mr. Atkins smiled and said she was very bold, but he made no difficulties and sent the things. And his wife retired with her dog to her room when we retired to ours, apparently without the least apprehension. When she came down in the morning, we were immediately struck at seeing her look very ill, and inquiring if she too had been frightened, she said she had been awakened in the night by something moving in her room, and that by the light of the night lamp she saw most distinctly a figure, and that the dog, which was spirited and flew at everything, never stirred, although she had endeavored to make him. We saw clearly that she had been very much alarmed, and when Mr. Atkins came and endeavored to dissipate the feeling by persuading her that she might have dreamt it, she got quite angry. We could not help thinking that she had actually seen something, and my mother said after she was gone that though she could not bring herself to believe it was really a ghost, still she earnestly hoped that she might get out of the house without seeing this figure, which frightened people so much. We were now within 3 days of the one fixed for our removal. I had been taking a long ride, and being tired had fallen asleep the moment I lay down. But in the middle of the night I was suddenly awakened. I cannot tell by what, for the steps over our heads we had become so used to it no longer disturbed us. While I awoke, I had been lying with my face toward my mother, who was asleep beside me, and as one usually does on waking, I turned to the other side, where the weather being warm, the curtain of the bed was undrawn, as it was also at the foot, and I saw standing by a chest of drawers, which were betwixt me and the window, a thin, tall figure in a loose powdering gown, one arm resting on the drawers, and the face turned toward me. I saw it quite distinctly by the night light, which burned clearly. It was a long, thin, pale, young face, with, oh, such a melancholy expression as can never be effaced from my memory. I was certainly very much frightened, but my great horror was lest my mother should wake and see the figure. I turned my head gently toward her and heard her breathing high in a sound sleep. Just then the clock on the stairs struck 4. I dare say it was nearly an hour before I ventured to look again, and when I did take courage to turn my eyes toward the drawers, there was nothing. Yet I had not heard the slightest sound, though I had been listening with the greatest intensity. As you may suppose, I never closed my eyes again, and glad I was when Cresswell knocked at the door, as she did every morning, for we always locked it, and it was my business to get out of bed and let her in. But on this occasion, instead of doing so, I called out, "Come in, the door is not fastened," upon which he answered that it was, and I was obliged to get out of bed and admit her as usual. When I told my mother what had happened, she was very grateful to me for not awaking her, and commended me much for my resolution. But as she was always my first object, that was not to be wondered at. She, however, resolved not to risk another night in the house, and we got out of it that very day, after instituting with the aid of the servant a thorough search, with a view to ascertain if there was any possible means of getting into the rooms, except by the usual modes of ingress. But our search was in vain. None could be discovered. I think from the errors in the names that the publishers of the accredited ghost stories must have obtained this account from the inhabitants of Lille. Considering the number of people that were in the house, the fearlessness of the family, and their disinclination to believe in what is called the supernatural, together with the great interest the owner of this large and handsome residence must have had in discovering the trick, if there had been one, I think it is difficult to find any other explanation of the strange story than that she had a disappointed spirit of this poor, injured, and probably murdered boy, had never been disengaged from its earthly relations, to which regret for its frustrated hopes and violated rights still held it attached. There is a story told by Pliny the Younger of a house in Athens in which nobody could live, from its being haunted. At length the philosopher Athenodorus took it, and the first night he was there, he seems to have comported himself very much as the courageous Mrs. Canning did on a similar occasion at Plymouth. He sent his servants to bed, and set himself seriously to work with his writing materials, determined that fancy should not be left free to play him false. For some time all was still, and his mind was wholly engaged in his labors, when he heard a sound like the rattling of chains, which was the sound that had frightened everybody out of the house. But Athenodorus closed his ears, kept his thoughts collected, and rode on without lifting up his eyes. The noise, however, increased. It approached the door. It entered the room. Then he looked round and beheld the figure of an old man, lean, haggard, and dirty, with his disheveled hair and a long beard, who held up his finger and beckoned him. Athenodorus made a gesture with his own hand in return, signifying that he should wait, and went on with his writing. Then the figure advanced and shook his chains over the philosopher's head, who, on looking up, saw him beckoning as before, whereupon he arose and followed him. The apparition walked slowly, as if obstructed by his chains, and having conducted him to a certain spot in the court which separated the two divisions of an ancient Greek house, he suddenly disappeared. Athenodorus gathered together some grass and leaves in order to mark the place, and the next day he recommended the authorities to dig there, which they did, and found the skeleton of a human being encircled with chains. It being taken up in the rites of sepulchre duly performed, the house was no longer disturbed. This was probably some poor prisoner also, and in his desire to direct notice to his body, we see the prejudices of his age and country surviving dissolution. Gross, the antiquary, who is, as I have before observed, very facetious on the subject of ghosts, remarks that dragging chains is not the custom of English ghosts, chains and black vestments being chiefly the accoutrements of foreign spectres, seen in arbitrary governments. Now, this is a very striking observation. One of the most melancholy and impressive circumstances of this sort I have met with occurred to Mrs. L., a lady with whose family I am acquainted. Mrs. L. herself having been kind enough to furnish me with the particulars. A few years since, she took a furnished house in Stevenson Street, North Shields, and she had been in it but a very few hours before she was perplexed by hearing feet in the passage, though whenever she opened the door she could see nobody. She went to the kitchen and asked the servant if she had not heard the same sound. She said she had not, but there seemed to be strange noises in the house. When Mrs. L. went to bed, she could not go to sleep for the noise of a child's rattle, which seemed to be inside her curtains. It rattled round her head first on one side, then on the other. Then there were sounds of feet, and of a child crying, and a woman sobbing, and in short so many strange noises, that the servant became frightened and went away. The next girl Mrs. L. engaged came from Leith, and was a stranger to the place, but she had only passed a night in the house, when she said to her mistress, "This is a troubled house you've got into, ma'am, and she described among the rest that she had repeatedly heard her own name called by a voice near her, although she could see nobody. One night Mrs. L. heard a voice, like nothing human, close to her, cry, "Weep, weep, weep." Then there was a sound like some struggling for breath, and again, "Weep, weep, weep." Then the gasping, and a third time, "Weep, weep, weep." She stood still and looked steadfastly on the spot whence the voice proceeded, but could see nothing, and her little boy who held her hand kept saying, "What is that, Mama? What is that?" She describes the sound as most frightful. All the noises seemed to suggest the idea of childhood and of a woman in trouble. One night, when it was crying round her bed, Mrs. L. took courage and adjured it, upon which the noises ceased for that time, but there was no answer. Mr. L. was at sea when she took the house, and when he came home he laughed at the story at first, but soon became so convinced the account she gave was correct that he wanted to have the boards taken up, because from the noises seeming to hover much about one spot, he thought perhaps some explanations of the mystery might be found. But Mrs. L. objected that if anything of a painful nature were discovered, she should not be able to continue in the house, and as she must pay the year's rent, she wished, if possible, to make out the time. She never saw anything but twice. Once the appearance of a child seemed to fall from the ceiling close to her, and then disappear. Another time she saw a child run into a closet in a room at the top of the house, and it was most remarkable that a small door in that room, which was used for going out onto the roof, always stood open. However often they shut it, it was always opened immediately by an unseen hand, even before they got out of the room, and this continued the whole time they were in the house, while night and day someone in creaking shoes was heard pacing backward and forward in the room over Mr. and Mrs. L.'s heads. At length the year expired, and to their great relief they quitted the house. But 5 or 6 years afterward, a person who had bought it, having taken up the floor of that upper room for repair, there was found close to the small door above alluded to the skeleton of a child. It was then remembered that some years before a gentleman of somewhat dissolute habits had resided there, and that he was supposed to have been on very intimate terms with a young woman servant who lived with him. But there had been no suspicion of anything more criminal. About 6 years ago, Mr. C., a gentleman engaged in business in London, heard of a good country house in the neighborhood of the metropolis which was to be had at a low rent. It was rather an old-fashioned place, and was surrounded by a garden and pleasure ground, and having taken a lease of it for 7 years, furnished as it was, his family moved thither, and he joined them once or twice a week, as his business permitted. They had been some considerable time in the house without the occurrence of anything remarkable, when one evening, toward dusk, Mrs. C., on going into what was called the oak bedroom, saw a female figure near one of the windows. It was apparently a young woman with dark hair hanging over her shoulders, a silk petticoat, and a short white robe, and she appeared to be looking eagerly through the window, as if expecting somebody. Mrs. C. clapped her hand upon her eyes, as thinking she had seen something she ought not to have seen, and when she looked again the figure had disappeared. Shortly after this, a young girl, who filled the situation of under-nursery maid, came to her in great agitation, saying that she had had a terrible fright from seeing a very ugly old woman looking in upon her as she passed the window in the lobby. The girl was trembling violently and almost crying, so that Mrs. C. entertained no doubts of the reality of her alarm. She, however, thought it advisable to laugh her out of her fear, and went with her to the window, which looked into a closed court. But there was no one there, neither had any of the other servants seen such a person. Soon after this, the family began to find themselves disturbed with strange and frequently very loud noises during the night. Among the rest, there was something like the beating of a crowbar upon the pump in the above-mentioned court, but search as they would, they could discover no cause for the sound. One day, when Mr. C. had brought a friend from London to stay the night with him, Mrs. C. thought proper to go up to the oak bedroom where the stranger was to sleep for the purpose of inspecting the arrangements for his comfort, when, to her great surprise, someone seemed to follow her up the fireplace, though on turning round there was nobody to be seen. She said nothing about it, however, and returned below, where her husband and the stranger were sitting. Presently, one of the servants tapped at the door and requested to speak with her, and Mrs. C., going out, she told her in great agitation that in going upstairs to the visitor's room, a footstep had followed her all the way to the fireplace, although she could see nobody. Mrs. C. said something soothing, and that matter passed, she herself being a good deal puzzled, but still unwilling to admit the idea that there was anything extra-natural in these occurrences. Repeatedly after this, these footsteps were heard in different parts of the house, when nobody was to be seen, and often, while she was lying in bed, she heard them distinctly approach her door, when, being a very courageous woman, she would start out with a loaded pistol in her hand. But there was never anyone to be seen. At length it was impossible to conceal from herself and her servants that these occurrences were of an extraordinary nature, and that the latter, as may be supposed, felt very uncomfortable. Among other unpleasant things, while sitting all together in the kitchen, they used to see the latch lifted and the door open, though no one came in that they could see. And when Mr. C. himself watched for these events, although they took place and he was quite on the alert, he altogether failed in detecting any visible agent. One night, the same servant who had heard the footsteps following her to the bedroom fireplace, happening to be asleep in Mrs. C.'s chamber, she became much disturbed and was heard to murmur, wake me," as if in great mental anguish. Being aroused, she told her mistress a dream she had had, which seemed to throw some light upon these mysteries. She thought she was in the oak bedroom, and at one end of it she saw a young female in an old-fashioned dress with long dark hair, while in another part of the room was a very ugly old woman, also in old-fashioned attire. The latter, addressing the former, said, "What have you done with the child, Emily? What have you done with the child?" To which the younger figure answered, "Oh, I did not kill it. He was preserved and grew up, and joined the regiment and went to India." Then, addressing the sleeper, the young lady continued, "I have never spoken to mortal before, but I will tell you all. My name is Miss Black, and this old woman is Nurse Black. Black is not her name, but we call her so because she has been so long in the family." Here the old woman interrupted the speaker by coming up and laying her hand on the dreaming girl's shoulder, while she said something, but she could not remember what, for feeling excruciating pain from the touch. She had been so far aroused as to be sensible she was asleep and to beg to be wholly awakened. As the old woman seemed to resemble the figure that one of the other servants had seen looking into the window, and the young one resembled that she had herself seen in the oak bedchamber, Mrs. C. naturally concluded that there was something extraordinary about this dream, and she consequently took an early opportunity of inquiring in the neighborhood what was known as to the names or circumstances of the former inhabitants of this house. And after much investigation, she learned that about 70 or 80 years before, it had been in the possession of a Mrs. Ravenhall, who had a niece named Miss Black living with her. This niece, Mrs. C., supposed might be the younger of the two persons who was seen. Subsequently, she saw her again in the same room, wringing her hands and looking with a mournful significance to one corner. They had the boards taken up at that spot, but nothing was found. One of the most curious incidents connected with the story remains to be told. After occupying the house 3 years, they were preparing to quit it, not on account of it being haunted, but for other reasons, when on awakening one morning, a short time before their departure, Mrs. C. saw standing at the foot of her bed a dark-complexioned man in a working dress, a fustian jacket, and red comforter round his neck, who, however, suddenly disappeared. Mr. C. was lying beside her at the time, but asleep. This was the last apparition seen. But the strange thing is that a few days after this, it being necessary to order in a small quantity of coals to serve till their removal, Mr. C. undertook to perform the commission on his way to London. Accordingly, the next day she mentioned to him that the coals had arrived, which he said was very fortunate, since he had entirely forgotten to order them. Wondering whence they had come, Mrs. C. hereupon inquired of the servants, who none of them knew anything about the matter. But on interrogating a person in the village by whom they had frequently been provided with this article, he answered that they had been ordered by a dark man in a fustian jacket and red comfort, who had called for the purpose. After this last event, Mr. and Mrs. C. quitted the house, but I have heard that his subsequent tenants encountered some similar annoyances, although I have no means of ascertaining the particulars.